morning. There was a a bear and a wolf and a fox that were out hunting, and they each got a deer. And so they were sitting around trying to decide how to divide up the spoils. And a wolf said, well, there's me and you the bear and you the fox, and there's three deer. Seems pretty obvious to me that each of us takes a deer, and that'll be how we just divide it up. So the bear promptly ate the wolf. And he turned to the fox. He said, how would you think we should divide these three deer up? The fox thought for a while and said, well, I think you should take the wolf's deer and probably mine too. And the bear said, how did you get so wise? He said, the wolf. He learned from the wolf. The Bible, especially the Old Testament, we're talking on Wednesday night, and we'll talk a little bit this morning. The Bible, Old Testament, is not about names. It's not about all those things. It's about the principles that we can learn to help us. You know, foolish people, and I've probably been one frequently, and I've known people that made a profession of it, that foolish people, they just don't learn from other people's mistakes and errors, from other people's endeavors. They just don't learn. We, I hope, are not foolish, that we're going to look at the things that we study and that we experience and learn from them so they don't repeat the same stupid mistakes we made the first time. But we all find ourselves doing that from time to time. I'm not going to read the story, but we're going to be talking about the story in Genesis, the story of Noah and the Ark. I happen to have been reading a book that had a start off for this lesson, so I just kind of finished it off. You remember that God looked at the people of his creation and multiplied, and he looked at them and he said, I've just never seen this. Every thought and intent in their heart is evil. I'm not sure that you and I have ever seen that. Even some of the most wicked people I know, you can find a shred of decency somewhere in them, usually. But God said that every thought and intent of their heart was wicked, so he determined to destroy them with a flood. And so he took and looked around, and the only people he could find that were following him and paying attention to what he wanted were Noah and his wife and his three sons. And so he advised Noah that I'm going to send a flood, and I want you, I don't know how Noah knew what a flood was, but I want you to build a boat. Now, this is not a little rowboat. This thing is 400 and some feet long. This is a football field and a half long. Now, is anybody, I know Derek, you guys have been there. I couldn't remember if you guys have been there down in, is that in Tennessee or Kentucky? Where they got the model of the Ark that's per scale? Huh? It's huge, yeah. It's a football field and a half long, and three distinct stories in it, and you all know about the Ark. It's a huge boat. But remember, he didn't have any Black and Deckers or Skills or Makitas or anything to use there. It was all hand-done and over a series of many, many, many years. Many years. So there is a book that's entitled Everything I Know About Life I Learned from the Ark, and that's where some of these came from, and some just came from my weird mind. So you'll have to, there is no particular order of these. But as you look at the story, we find that the people that survived were all in the same boat. There were not two boats, there was one boat. One boat. And we're all in the same boat. I think one of the most important considerations that we as Christians can make is that we are all in the same boat. We're all sinners, worth determined by Jesus and not by ourselves. Romans talks about everybody having sinned and come short of the glory of God. In James, the second chapter, verse 10, it talks about offending and people who are offenders of the law. The person who offends in one point is guilty of all. Now, that's easy to say, and it's easy, maybe easy to understand, but I want to put a phrase to that, and I really want to try to make us think about it. So think about this. You are no better in God's eyes without Christ than a murdering pedophile. I picked out things that you would find disgusting. But without Christ, you and I am no better without Christ than a murdering pedophile. Makes you feel good, doesn't it? Nothing like starting a lesson out by making you feel good. Or said another way, a murdering pedophile is equal to us in God's eyes if we don't have Christ. I think one of the keys to our effectiveness and our growth as Christians is remembering that everything that we achieve and everything that we learn and everything that we do in our behaviors that is right with God do not make us any better than anyone else. Because of Jesus, we're better. So, we're all in the same boat. The second thing is, obviously, Noah preached to all the people around about, and he planned ahead, and they didn't. Okay? He planned ahead. There's a kind of a difficult balance to make here, because you look in Matthew, the 25th chapter. We find this parable. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened to 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom, and 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. Now what they thought they were doing with, you know, burn on air or something. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. The wise answered, saying, not so, lest there be not enough for us and you, but go ye rather to them that sell and buy for yourselves. And when they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they were ready, went in with them to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgins, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. He answered and said, verily, I say unto you, I know you not. This is about planning ahead. This is about being ready for what we can see coming. And it sounds as if, and I believe it is, that Jesus is in favor of that. But you'll also find other places where it talks about some problems with planning ahead. In Philippians, the third chapter, not where I want to be. Here we are. This famous set of verses that says, brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, reaching forth to those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize, the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. So, I'm living in today. I'm living today. I know what's out there, but I don't live for out there. I live today. I can't live out there. I live for today. I can't live back there. That's gone. I can't live there. The only place you live is today. That's where you live, and that's where you make decisions. In James, the fourth chapter, go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city, and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get a gain. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It's even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanisheth away. Just as aside from that, I have this discussion frequently at the office, people saying, you remember when you were young and older folks said that time goes faster as you get older? And you say, what a dumb thing to say. You know, the clock moves at the same speed all the time. And it does seem, we comprehend it, we appreciate it going faster. It goes the same speed, but going forward. For the you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. if the Lord will, we shall do that. But now you rejoice in your boastings, all such rejoicing is evil. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good, when? Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good today, and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Okay? What I have is today. I plan ahead, I prepare for what I know, but unfortunately, we don't know much about tomorrow. And so I live for today. And you have too, you know people who live for tomorrow. You know, they live until their kids aren't little anymore. And then they live until their kids are out of high school. And then I'll live when usually we do this in talking about retirement. And then I'll live until my kids are out of college. And then I'll live till my money is at such and such level. And one day one of them dies and there's no living. Forgot to live in the day. Live for today. Third one. Stay fit. When you're 600 years old, someone may ask you to do something really big. 600 years old and building an ark with hand tools, a football field and a half long. And there's lots about that ark we don't understand. By the way, how they light that thing? How did they light that thing? I had never understood how they had any light on the bottom. They had one window in the top. I've never understood how they could see what they were doing in there. Maybe God lit it up. I don't know, but no light. Stay fit so you can do what God had. Eat right, think right, and exercise right. And that's physical too, right? That's physical too, because when I feel physically well, then I'm more able to do the things I ought to do. But it's also spiritually. Eat right, think right, exercise right. It would be helpful for me, I think, if I would think of certain situations that I get into or things I need to do, if I thought of it as a form of exercise spiritually. It may not have anything to do, obviously, with spiritual things, but say I have to confront an employee. I don't have employees anymore. I have to confront someone about something. It's not something I would enjoy doing. But I can consider it an exercise in how I display my patience, my concern, my compassion, while at the same time displaying my concern for rules and doing what you should, etc. That's an exercise. But I don't usually think of those things as exercises when I'm going through them. That's a spiritual exercise. A spiritual exercise. And I might do it different if I thought of it that way. Number four. Don't listen to critics. Get on with the job that needs to be done. Can you imagine? This would be like me setting up shop out here in the yard and starting to try to build a rocket. A rocket. And people would come over and say, "What are you building?" "I'm building a rocket." "You're building what?" "I'm building a rocket." "For what?" "I'm building a boat." "For what? For what are you building this boat? There's not even any body of water here around you. Certainly not one that's going to support a football field and a half boat." And for all those years when he was preaching to them that they need to correct themselves, he endured that criticism. "You idiot. You fool." And the same thing happens to us. Don't listen to critics. In 1 Corinthians 4, Paul was being criticized, and I think he gave us a key. 1 Corinthians 4, 3 and 4. "With me it is a very small thing." They were saying that he wasn't any big force, and he didn't speak very well, and he wasn't very commanding in his presentation, etc., etc., etc. "But with me it is a very small thing that I should be judged of you or of man's judgment. Yea, I judge not mine own self. For I know nothing by myself, yet am I not hereby justified." Important one. He that judges me is the Lord. He that judges me is the Lord. Remember who your judge is. You remember we've been studying the Old Testament a little bit in 1 Samuel. Remember David shows up at the battle when they're arrayed against one another and Goliath is out in front of them and daring them to send somebody over to fight with him? Let's see if we can read this. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. I would have been too. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to divide Israel is he come up, and it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. No taxation, free. David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and said, you idiot. Why camest thou down hither? With whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart. I know about you. You're nobody to be slaying Goliath. Suck it in there, bud. You're no one to be doing this. For thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? Isn't there a reason? Don't we have a reason for this? Don't listen to critics. You remember in Acts, the fifth chapter, when Peter and the other apostles were brought in and beaten, and they said, get out of here, we're not interested in your teaching. And they went and they prayed with the other disciples, and the next Sabbath they were in the synagogue preaching. Next one. Criticism is only as good as its basis. Number five. Build your future on the high ground. Build your future on high ground. Colossians 3 says, if ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on earth. So we do what's right at the right time, in the right way, because we're putting our future in a higher place. Number six, for safety's sake, travel in pairs. The people that they brought on the ark brought them in pairs, obviously, so they could reproduce when the ark was done with its purpose. But you think about the New Testament and the apostles. Here are people with the Holy Spirit and miraculous gifts. You can heal people, bring people back to life, give them sight when they haven't ever heard. Almost always they were traveling in pairs, or at least with a group around them. Almost always. You and I understand that when we're together, we feel much safer, usually, than we do when we're apart. In Malachi, which I am not in often, the third chapter in verse 16, it says, then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it. And a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord and that thought upon his name together. If you go back with me to the story of the Good Samaritan, I know parables, as we mentioned today in class, you can take them too far. They were really designed for a specific purpose, but I always believe that Jesus is far wise enough to not put anything in there that would mislead us in some other way. But the Good Samaritan, why weren't the priests attacked? Why weren't the priests attacked? Why wasn't the Samaritan attacked? And I would give you my guess, they weren't by themselves. They were with other people. Every one of us is linked to every other one of us. When one of us has a problem, everybody has a problem. Whether we like it to be true or we don't, we are linked. I was many moons ago in a college class on marriage. And I was the only married one in there. I was the only married person in the class when I was a junior at Simpson. And I remember that they did this demonstration where we all sat in a circle and they ran the string back and forth all directions in between. And nobody could move without affecting every other person in that group. It stuck with me all this time. That's the way we are as Christians, or should be. Nobody is unaffected by anybody else in the group, positively or negatively. Either way, none of us are unaffected. We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification, for even Christ pleased not himself. But as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproach thee fell on me. For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. Now the God of patience and consolation grant you to be like-minded one toward another according to Christ Jesus. Does that mean I have to think like you think? Does that mean you and I are going to agree on everything? No. It means I care about you like Jesus cared about you. That's what my goal is. You care about me the same way. That we may all one mind and one mouth glorify God in the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. We are linked despite all our blemishes. Because of all our blemishes, we are linked. Number 7. Must have been getting a little weird here. Speed isn't always an advantage. You do realize that the cheetah and the snail ended up on the ark. Speed isn't an advantage. How fast I can move, how good you can do something, how good I can do something. We all have limitations. In 2 Corinthians, I ran across in the 10th chapter, verses 10 through 14, again, this is where they're talking about Paul, and they're saying that he's not very impressive. For his, Paul's, letters, they say, are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech is contemptible. Let such an one think this, that such as we are in word by letters when we are absent, such will we be also indeed when we are present. For we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some of them that commend themselves, but they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. But we will not boast of things without our measure. Now, that's what I want. We will not boast of things. What's that mean? We will not boast of things without our measure, but according to the measure of the rule which God has distributed to each one of us, a measure to reach even unto you. God's the one's dealing this out. You know, in the New Testament church, you remember the miraculous gifts? The miraculous gifts, they didn't decide who got what. God decided. Even the apostles didn't know what they were going to get and didn't know what they were going to transfer to someone else. God decided, and that's true of all of us. And I needed to remember that everybody isn't like me, and I'm not like everybody else. And that's what makes us strong. That's what makes us strong. I've always had a problem with, they love this as a school board, always had a problem with gifted classes. What's the other phrase? Talented and gifted classes. And if you're in it, I fear there's a tendency to think you're a little better than everybody else. And I think it's true in some ways. But all of us are talented and gifted. All of us are talented and gifted in some way or another. And we need to find the measure that God's given us. So self-evaluation, comparing myself with myself and with God. Okay, let's see if we can get to these. Number 8. When you're stressed, float for a while. When you're stressed, float for a while. I think we need to, I need to. I'll just put this in my corner. When you're stressed, float for a while. In Psalms, David said, I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety. That peace. Does that mean that I'm always at ease as a Christian? No, not at all. But I always have him to come back to say this stress is nothing compared to what the reward is. And this stress is nothing compared to what Jesus did on the cross, as Charles Abley told us this morning. You know, in stress situations, in anxiety situations, we all have things we go to that help us. If you were in my bedroom currently and you looked under the bed, you would say, "What is that doing there? There's a basketball under my bed." And if you would go to my old office, I haven't transferred it over to the new office yet, and you go back in my office, there's a basketball there. Because I calm and think clearer when I'm holding the thing. Now, tell me that makes any sense, okay? But that's all those years of messing with that thing. That was my safety valve, my place of comfort. And I feel better. I control it better when I'm handling it. I don't have to be doing anything, just when I'm handling it. That's what God needs to do for us. I feel better in all situations, and I can relax when I'm thinking about God because of his assurance. I've got another book I'm reading. I know most people read one book at a time. I think I got usually three or four, but I'm reading this, and this caught my attention. Margaret's been going down to had been going down to cardiac rehab, and we stop at the used place there because she likes to buy more things and get more stuff. And they have a good bookstore, and it's the first one for 50 cents and the second one's free, so it's 25 cents a piece. I'm going through their books. I got 100 and some books I just carried up to my den that I got to put somewhere. But I look through the books, and there's this book that just caught my attention, and I'm going to maybe come back and talk about it, but it's entitled, and I thought this was me, "I Feel Guilty When I Relax." I feel guilty when I relax. That shouldn't be true of Christians, but it all has to do with the intermingling of self-pressure and what we're taught as children, how we're not really good at relaxing. At least I'm measuring you in my bucket at relaxing, okay? We need to float a while. You think about that. You feel guilty when you relax. Feel like you ought to be doing something. Should be doing something. If Tim relaxes, he goes and gets the shears or the lawnmower, and the yard is getting fixed again. Even to the extent, I pick on Timmy, that a couple of holidays ago, I bought him a light to put on his head so he could see what he was doing after dark in his yard. So that's, I feel guilty when I relax. Number 9, remember the Ark was built by amateurs, the Titanic was built by professionals. Okay? The Ark was built by amateurs, the Titanic was built by professionals. In Ephesians, the fourth chapter, we have a little place where Paul talks to us about our togetherness. 2, we all come in the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God into a perfect man, into the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive, but speaking the truth in love may grow up into him in all things which is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted by that which every, that word every is in there for a reason, which every joint supplieth, according to the effectual working in the measure of every part, maketh the increase of the body into the edifying of itself in love. That every joint supplieth. Every single one of us supplies something. Every joint supplieth. If you ever get an injury, everything around it starts hurting. And then everything around that starts hurting. And for long, you're just a pain. Okay? Just a pain. Every joint supplieth. I want you to think about how important was the person, I don't know which one of them did it, you know, when they built the ark, they built it, and then they smeared it inside and out with pitch, with tar, so it would be waterproof. How important was the person that put the pitch in the last pinhole? How important was it? How much training did that take? How smart did you have to be to do that? How important was it? In 1 Corinthians it talks, and the foot says to the hand, and the eye says to the ear, and I'm more important, and you're less important. You can't. Nah. Jesus is important. We all are just amateurs trying to do what we need to do. 10. A woodpecker always makes holes. A woodpecker always makes holes. And I wonder if there were woodpeckers on the ark. And I wonder what they did with them. Probably an inner room, don't you suppose? Not an outer room. We need to remember that the devil is always there, whether we think we're doing okay or we're not. Sometimes we're more dangerous when we think we're doing okay, more dangerous to ourselves. That's why Paul says, I've learned how to be abased. And he's not just talking about money and things there. This is attitudes and everything. I learned how to be abased, and I learned how to abound. And perhaps we're more danger when we're abounding, because then we think we're okay. And the last one, everyone wants to get on the middle of the lake. When you're in the middle of the lake and the water's rising, everybody wants to get on the boat. Don't miss the boat. Don't miss the boat. Jesus has given us a way of escape that we didn't deserve. We don't deserve. Still. And we should look at it like those people outside and inside looked at the ark. How dramatic was it to all those people banging on the side of the ark? Let me in. Let me in. But it was too late. And how dramatic was it to the people inside the ark when they heard those people outside, how happy they were that they'd paid attention. They paid attention. You and I, it says in a verse, I think, that Destry's going to get to in class, rejoice evermore. We should be rejoicing people because we have the opportunity, and most of us here have accepted and are in the boat. Jesus has rescued us. We're in the boat. It's a lifeboat. We should be forever grateful for that no matter what happens in our life. Anyway, you can play with this a little bit if you want, because any story like this, you can do all kinds of things with it, but we need to realize how much we're connected, and we need to realize what God has really done for us. Don't miss a boat. We'll offer the invitation to anyone who might be in need, because we don't want anybody drowning in sin as we stand and sing.